The following is a meeting with disciples with His Holiness Srila Satsvarupa Das Goswami on October 13, 1992 in Vrindavan.
I'll have to speak a little loudly, I guess, to be heard. This is a meeting, as announced, of my disciples. As usually happens, some people come who aren't my disciples, and you're welcome. These people are basically in two categories, those who are still deciding on who their spiritual master is, and considering that I may be, and those who definitely have already fixed the spiritual master, but they're coming anyway in a friendly mood. So I can't accommodate any audience except that I'm speaking to disciples, otherwise it gets diffused. So if you're not a disciple, if I say anything, don't take offense, think that I'm trying to speak to you as a disciple, because you come to a meeting like this at your own risk. But you can just sort it out and keep the identity that you have. As for those three men on the roof, they're in a different category. Vrijabasis, who are curious without any shyness. I have a mixed agenda of things. We're getting close to picking out a day to have a fire yoga and initiation. So that raises some issues to discuss for those who are considering initiation either this time or in the future, and those already initiated. Those already initiated, to discuss the relationship of the spiritual master and disciple. Sometimes new devotees serve somewhere, and they may give me some initial notice that they're thinking that they would like me to initiate them. In some cases, I don't even get the notice. But after that, there's no communication, and in a sense, innocently, they think that they'll get initiated as soon as they get their recommendation. But I sometimes have to point out that that's a very important part of the initiation. But an equally important part is that over the time from when you begin becoming serious about Krishna consciousness, you have to develop a relationship with the spiritual master. Not only that in your mind it's there. That's partly the relationship, but you have to come forward and let me know that you want to be initiated, that you expect to be initiated, and that you want to know what it means to be a disciple of myself, and so on. And when we say that the temple authority is required, that's not just some institutional formality. What it means is someone who can attest that you are following the four rules, chanting 16 rounds, and this you would do also before the spiritual master. In honesty, you would be telling him of this. So this is so obvious, but it has to be said that you can't be initiated until you're following the rules and regulations, or you can't be second initiated unless you've been following. Sometimes devotees develop a kind of blind spot and think that they will get initiated anyway, even though within the time they have not been following. So that's a very bad thing to do. Better to wait and then do it when you're actually qualified. In some cases, some devotees who have gone outside of ISKCON to get initiated, but hoping to work in ISKCON, Partly I've been motivated because they could be initiated without following the standard. But the standard that Prabhupada has set, we have to follow. That strictly follow these four rules and chanting 16 rounds and working in his movement in the recognized way that one is part of ISKCON. Some devotees ask about how to improve the relationship existing, how to make it more personal. So, there are different ways to explain this, and different ways to do it. For example, according to gender, male or female, there's a division of appropriate activities. Some things are not appropriate for women, but there's definitely equal opportunity. Women shouldn't think that, have some real spiritual disappointment that because I'm a woman, I am not able to develop a relationship with a spiritual master as a man can. There are certain things that you may not be able to do, but then by doing it, by serving in another way, appropriately, then you're able to do the same thing. For example, out here in this house where we're staying, we usually have another man along with Madhu. We couldn't have a lady. But there are ladies who are doing all kinds of services that for one reason or another men are not doing, like cooking and cleaning. So, this is an external description of the activities. I want to respond to this when people say they're not satisfied, they're not, even though they have service, they feel it's not personalized enough. I don't always know what to do. We can't make material gestures in the name of trying to satisfy the need for personal relationships. And things don't always work out just like we would like in this world in terms of encounters, meetings, exchanges. We have to be patient, and whatever happens, accept it, not be envious of what exchanges others have, and just try to preserve the real integrity of our own relationship, which is not based just on accumulation of favors or certain external signs of affection and exchange, but is a deep, ongoing thing. Takes place over time of right behavior. I think a lot of whatever positive recognition I got from Srila Prabhupada had to do with time, that I was still there. I had been there from the beginning and I was still there. So with time and faithfulness over time, everything will be satisfied. And we shouldn't make too much out of particular moments that don't go just the way we would like them to go. But you can know I'm always wishing to satisfy each one of you. I was sorry that we didn't, now in 2 weeks we haven't had any meetings like this, or more opportunities. But I'm also encouraged when I hear devotees being satisfied with whatever we are able to do. And certainly a sign of looking for a relationship is good rather than not caring about it at all. Speaking to new devotees gives me a chance to express some basic things that I don't mind your hearing, even if you've heard them before, about myself. And like with new devotees, I try to make it clear to them before they've chosen a spiritual master what they can expect in terms of reciprocation with me. I always make it clear to them that I probably can't travel to their country if it's not one of those places that I'm usually traveling. And to make up for that, I'm making it clear that this visiting to India is regular for me, and that you can try to come, especially if I don't come to your place. So don't expect me to come, and that can't be an expectation that I must come to Texas or North Europe or wherever it is. I make it clear in the beginning, but sometimes someone still expects that I'm supposed to do this. What I try to make clear is that better that you take a spiritual master who will be coming there if that's essential, important. I'm kind of explaining now my side of personal dealings. Disciple would like things to go a certain way, the spiritual master would like things to go a certain way, and it would seem that his request should take priority if the disciple is doing things in the mood of the spiritual master, rather than the spiritual master is trying to get into the mood of the disciples. But if they get into his way of doing things, then they'll be satisfied. So I'm trying to pursue my path in this movement, making contribution to this movement in a certain way, which is you can understand through the things I write or by observing the way I live. So I'm doing what I can to serve in that way. If my disciples are working against me in that way, then that becomes burdensome. Just like I don't like to get involved in so many ISKCON controversies. I'm not a manager. But if my devotees are trying, or the devotees are trying to drag me in unnecessarily to controversies, which they themselves have no real business being involved in, then I have to get involved in order to satisfy them, provide them information, and so on. Of course, it would be impossible to say I don't want to be disturbed, so don't bring me into disturbances. I'll qualify that. But still, the mood should be there. Like Prabhupada used to say, bring me good news. He wasn't shy to say it. So it's not good for my vitality and ability to give as much as I can. I'm supposed to be giving positive energy to so many individuals and training them up to get over their anarthas and so on. If I keep getting dragged into unnecessarily into their disturbances. So as I say, I have to qualify that I do want to, I have to hear and want to hear your problems, but it should be that you ask it with faith, that my answer will be meaningful to you, and that you'll try to practice it to the best of your ability, that you'll be very honest, and try to the best of your ability to conduct all this on a spiritual level, not on a material level. I'm nobody's husband, I'm nobody's material friend, and so on. I'm supposed to be spiritual guide. And in that capacity, if I agree to accept your service and your faithfulness, then I have to reciprocate to the full extent. A little later, I have some replies I've made. Well, here's one I can read now. Reply to a letter, I'll just read an excerpt. And So to make it clear, it's not like I'm saying I only want to hear idealistic things from you and not hear your difficulty. You don't have to be sorry for your doubtful questions. As we advance, we may ask better questions. But even Arjuna asks doubtful questions. As long as they're not done in a challenging way, they're required to clear things up. It is more important to ask a question that is really concerning us on our heart, and it is never good to just try to make a show of being an expert disciple. The first and basic step is Shraddha, faith. It may sometimes come out awkwardly on the disciple's part because he or she knows that they're not completely surrendered and ready to do whatever the guru asks. But still they want the guru to accept them, and they want to make an earnest endeavor to do the best they can and to advance and surrender. The spiritual master will accept this earnestness and try to encourage the disciple. Keep it simple and honest and you will progress. And here's a statement regarding what I was saying about demanding for more personal attention. Here's an example of a person who was finding personal attention gratefully, and this is encouraging to me to hear. Thank you for your grateful statements. You have been listening with enthusiasm to the Prabhupada class. I know it is a very big class, and so in some ways I cannot give personal attention, but you are so receptive that you are taking it nicely, and I thank you for it. I thank you also for finding our letter correspondence meaningful. In the Prabhupada class, we often tell about what he's doing, and then we speak about some application. Sometimes we say something he does can't be applied, can't be imitated. But often we say, he was doing this, so we should do this. So it's natural that the disciples of each of the spiritual masters in ISKCON will be doing that, will be taking the same path of their spiritual masters. That's why they selected them. One devotee, a disciple, wrote me recently after reading something I wrote and said that although this path of Krishna consciousness is clearly scientifically chalked out by the six Goswamis, it's a fact that when we try to apply it ourselves, we have to undergo so much self-searching, self-examination. So I see that you're always doing this in your writing. And I find that as I accept these writings from you, that my path is also being formed in the same way as introspective and so on. So that's a good thing. That will give us personal reciprocation with the spiritual master, displaying this guru nishtha, that the way he does things, we want to do them, and we want to please Krishna. That's our goal. Guru is to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. But we have trust to that extent. So I like that kind of reciprocation. I also like to see disciples who are trying to make their contribution to this movement, which can be done in so many different ways. And I see that as personal. We both try to do that. Disciple tries to think, I'm doing this particular service in my temple, in my country. How is my spiritual master accepting this? How is this service to him? So that may be sometimes be seen as a problem because it doesn't seem connected. But like so many things, it can work if we work at it. It's like a marriage needs to be worked out between the husband and wife. And then it can become successful, maybe with a lot of work. So all these things, they can be done, and this can be done also, that you serve under the order of the spiritual master. I think I'll keep speaking for a while, even though I'm shift to a few different, to what, just basically one other subject, and then we can take some questions. And I can mention a couple of things besides that at the end. I'm in touch with many of you individually by letters. And some themes are coming out about being in Vrindavan. Devotees are getting positive experience living in the Dham. I think we're all feeling some of the strain right now of the campus is so filled up just by the sheer number of people. It's hard to have so many relationships and to keep staying in the mood of Vrindavan. But we have to be patient about this, not become overwhelmed by it. Don't fall into superficial life or agitated life. But another aspect of living in Vrindavan is, as devotees say, and we experience, that Vrindavan tends to bring out anarthas and tends to magnify things. But you see them clearer, things that may not be very nice about yourself get exposed, and it's an opportunity for doing more work than usual on these problems. Another way of saying this is that I see that many of the devotees are struggling with very basic beginner's problems. Although this is, Vrindavan is not the land of beginners, it's the land of the most confidential devotees of the Lord. And so we come here, we hear something about this, and we get attracted to the most confidential aspects. And that's good that it becomes awakened, as it only can in Vrindavan. But because of the purifying effect of the anarthas, we're also faced with the fact that may be covered over elsewhere, of having severe problems of the neophyte category. So we have to face this. We shouldn't try to just cover it over and try to enter the secrets of Vrindavan. That will not be possible. Then we'll have to leave Vrindavan. So, in one hand, the setting of Vrindavan inspires us in satsanga to read about Radha and Krishna, and Krishna and his friends in Vrindavan. And I've done that in some meetings and want to continue. But because of this, what I just explained, it also, the setting of Vrindavan also inspires us to talk about basic improvement, basic anarthas. So I wanted to do that a little bit by looking at the very beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, where the pushing agents are described. Vacho vegam, manasat krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam, etan vegan, yovijahe tadira, sarvam apimam prithivim sasiksha. And Rupa Goswami says, a sober person can tolerate these pushing demands that come from the urge to speak, from the mind's demands, from the actions of anger, the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals. It's a long purport. I'm not going to systematically cover it, but I marked a few places. Starting with the tongue, which is where devotional service begins. Prabhupada says it may sound odd, but that's where it begins. Sevan mukhi jiva do. So Prabhupada says here, the tongue wants to eat palatable dishes. We should not allow the tongue to eat according to its choice, but should control the tongue by supplying prasad. One should take prasad at scheduled times and should not eat in restaurants or sweetmeat shops simply to satisfy the whims of the tongue or belly. If we stick to the principle of taking only prasad, the urges of the belly and tongue can be controlled. In a similar manner, the urges of the genitals, the sex impulse, can be controlled when not used unnecessarily. So, he says the Krishna consciousness movement encourages marriage and raising children in Krishna consciousness, otherwise not using. So, especially in this holy place, there should be no such offenses. Commenting on the Upadeshamrita verse, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati comments that there are three kinds of urges: the urge to speak, the urges of the mind, and the demands of the body. So to control these things is to practice tapasya. I think what last time we had a meeting, or maybe it was at the Istagosti, Gaura Bhakta was asking, how do we practice renunciation in Vrindavan? So our renunciation is to control the pushing demands of our minds and our senses in Vrindavan or wherever we are. So the mind, it comes up with so many unfavorable things so quickly, one after another, becoming envious, finding faults, thinking of horrible things. So that is not our real self, that mind. We are different than the nasty thoughts. The mind is the friend, and we can identify when it's the friend, and we know when it's not the friend. So that unfriendly mind is not me, and I have to disassociate myself from it, even though I cannot stop it, stop its babble, its insane prattling, its vicious talk. But I don't have to take it so seriously. It's not reality. So we have to control the mind. And live very carefully with the right behavior for our ashram and so on, so we don't get in any compromising situations to commit anything like sinful activity. The sexual offense or sexual fall down has different aspects aside from gross. The Prabhupada writes, as far as the urges of the genitals are concerned, there are two, proper and improper, legal or illicit. Again, he talks about marriage for having children. That is legal and religious. Otherwise, he may adopt many artificial means to satisfy the demands of the genitals, and he may not use any restraint. When one indulges in illicit sex, as defined in the Shastras, either by thinking, planning, talking about, or actually having sexual intercourse, or by satisfying the genitals by artificial means, he is caught in the clutches of Maya. These instructions apply not only to householders, but also to tyagis, or those who are on the renounced order of life. So the whole subject is control of the mind and control of the senses, although they want to do their thing in a way that will be harmful for us. The one who can control the senses is a Goswami, and one who cannot is a Godas. The Godasas engage in the service of the senses or the service of the material world. Prahlad Maharaj has described the Godas as Adantago, those whose senses are not controlled. An Adantago cannot become a servant of Krishna. Matirna Krishna Paratakshvatova Mitovi Padyeta Grihavitanam Adantago Bir Vishatam Tamisram Punakpanas Charvita Charvananam. For those who have decided to continue their existence in this material world for the gratification of their senses, there is no chance of becoming Krishna conscious, not by personal endeavor, by instruction from others, or by joint conferences. So here in Vrindavan, we can go and see one devotee or see another devotee. We're going to different classes and privately meeting people who we think can tell us some nectar or give us some good instructions. or you're on your own writing in a diary or meditating or praying, but it won't do any good if you're a Adanta Go. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chewed. Then, of course, this book discusses the unfavorable six items, the devotional service, and the six favorable items. And I just wanted to mention one of them, actually, and that's prajalpa. Especially now, as the mandir fills up, there's so much to talk. Prajalpa, unnecessary talking. When we mix with a few friends, we immediately begin unnecessary talking, sounding just like croaking toads. If we must talk, we should talk about Krishna consciousness movement. Those outside of the Krishna consciousness movement are interested in reading heaps of newspapers, magazines, and novels, solving crossword puzzles, etc., etc. They waste their time and energy. I hope by mentioning these things, these wonderful basic teachings, this nectar of instruction, that we can take a firm hold in ourselves. Most of us are past the halfway mark in our visit to Vrindavan. Maybe we've been veering off, losing some of the wonder of it, novelty even of it, and afraid that we may be wasting our precious time. For some of us, it took many years to get here, and it cost so much money, and we have expectations of really making some improvement before we go back. So now, in the remaining days that you have, if we work on these anarthas, then the wonderful things, they will happen, they will come more freely. We'll be able to go around on parikram and feel something, and in the classes hear something, and store something within. And on the negative side, we won't commit some bad offense. So let us try to use this time very nicely. And if I can help in any way I can, I will. So now, if you have some questions, we can talk about that. Anything. Of course, try to be relevant to these topics. Okay.
I have a question that I'm bringing from today's Prabhupada class. It's not 100% relevant. You were bringing out how Prabhupada encouraged disciples to shoot for the rhinoceros and work beyond their capacity. What kind of guidelines could you give as to how we can set a governor so that we don't go way beyond and bite off more than we can chew?
Well, one thing is, Prabhupada said, okay, yeah, in the seminar today, there were two teachings of Prabhupada, shoot for the rhinoceros, and the other was, from the teachings that he read in the class, he said that you should try to aim beyond your expectation. Or capacity, even?
Capacity.
Heavy. He said that if you go into an exam thinking that you'll get a decent mark, you'll get less than that. But if you think I'm going to get the highest, then you... So, his question is, how can we govern that so we don't bite off more than we can chew? One thing is, we shouldn't set such a quick time fulfillment plan on these things. Even Srila Prabhupada, he took his time. He had his sights set high, and he worked for it. So he was patient. So keeping in the spirit of that, being very ambitious and trying for the top, we should set the high goal. Don't set a lesser goal right from the beginning. But think, when I get there, I want this goal. So it should be the topmost goal of Krishna consciousness. I want to be a pure devotee. I want to enter the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Or in my activity in ISKCON, I want to do something wonderful in the spirit of Prabhupada's mood. But then I have to build toward it. So that would be one governor it takes time to prepare yourself and to develop through stages to get there. And then, at any point, if we feel like we're just dying, we're just drying up spiritually because we're working so hard on some particular project that we're not regularly chanting and hearing, then that's not right either. So there's some, if we're becoming agitated, so agitated that we're angry, irritable, physically sick, neglecting sadhana. Why? Because I'm working for this goal. I'm trying to shoot the rhinoceros. Then something is wrong, just like in a car engine when something sounds wrong. You have to pull over and fix it, and then go ahead. So Prabhupada is, in some sense, he's a very demanding master, so it takes all our thoughtfulness and as well as all our endeavor to fulfill, not that you just hear something he says and then run off on a half-baked charge up the hill against the opposition and just get knocked right off because you didn't think of so many things that you were supposed to how to do it. He says something very demanding, and that means you have to be well-equipped, and you go back to him and said, I tried it, but I fell on my face. Prabhupada was very intelligent and cool-headed. He says, he's commenting on the Bhagavad Gita, how in the beginning the general goes to his commander-in-chief and says, what is the position of the armies? and he's told about the formidable nature of the opponents. So Prabhupada says, this is intelligence, not just to see the good side, but you have to see the black side, the dark side of something in order to be effective. So shooting for the rhinoceros is not just by pep talk and enthusiasm to do the best thing, but what can we actually do? Who is the opposition? How to proceed, and then go ahead, but with all intelligence. I gave you that example from the story Prabhupada told about the horse. The Ganges was so swift from the monsoon that many big animals were being carried off. They were trying to cross. In India, sometimes the animals cross without a boat. So they were trying to cross, but they were being swept down the current. Finished. So many strong young horses and cows were swept away that way. And then an old horse came to the bank, and he looked and he saw all the strong animals being swept off. And he said, let me try. And he went in and was carried off. So that's the balance to shoot for the rhinoceros. Get the example that Prabhupada gives about the the elephant and the crocodile, is told the crocodile was beating the elephant because he was in his element, the water. And Prabhupada says, we should get fixed in our element where we can fight best. Try to fight on our terms, and then we'll be strong. Don't get into a fight on Maya's terms. So he particularly gives the example that if you don't feel strong in the brahmachari or sannyasa ashram to fight Maya, then get in a position that may seem, oh, he's taking a lesser position. But actually, by doing this, he can stand stronger and he can fight better against Maya. We're going to have to fight Maya one way or another. So take a stand where you have your, as he say, full sensual power and mental power and everything. You be in your comfortable element so that you can shoot the rhinoceros. But if he goes out on a dangerous safari and he hasn't eaten and he's feeling sick and he's got a gun that he doesn't know how to use, he says, well, I have to shoot the rhinoceros. And he has no safari guide. But do it so that you're in position with many advantages on your side as possible. Even if those advantages look like compromises to some. Don't imitate others. Well, I was making a commentary on Adanta Go. Prahlad Maharaj said that if you go to conferences, consult with others, or try alone to be Krishna conscious, you won't be able to do it if you're chewing the chews. So he's referring to a kind of hypocritical, self-defeating approach. So I was talking about not being able to follow the four rules, and how if we don't do that, then our attempts to be Krishna conscious will be undermined. So still the other is true, that in any condition you're in, if you chant Hare Krishna, it'll be beneficial for you. But it's such a basic thing that we have to get together, that we have to do for ourselves, that it can't be overlooked. I don't think anyone would say, it's all right if you yourself are not controlling your mind and your belly and tongue and genitals. You just come to this class and you'll get the higher taste. But this must be done. In fact, like the VIHE, they have certain requirements before you attend. You have to pay some money, but then also you have to go to the morning program. And it's and unless you have a Bhagavad Gita course, you can't take another course. So one is supposed to take care of oneself and have certain qualifications before you can really start developing the higher taste. Especially in the very beginning, it would be more applicable that you can be very fallen and still you can be lifted up, like Prabhupada would say. We have some rules and regulations, but if you cannot follow them, still chant Hare Krishna with us. But when one is initiated and second initiated, then that's just assumed that you'll not be able to make advancement. It's like if we read in books like Madhurya Kandimbini, which tells us how to get to the highest stages of prema, But then all the anarthas are outlined, and it said, unless you overcome these anarthas, you cannot get to the next stage. There's no question that, yes, you can have Ruchi, you can have a Shakti, you can have Bhava, even if you have anarthas. But very scientifically, it's described, most of the anarthas go away at this stage, then you can get this stage. When these anarthas are removed, then you can get this stage. But in a basic way, even when we're faulty, we're encouraged to come to Vrindavan and hear and chant, and the higher taste will come. Everything has to be done, not just working at controlling the senses without hearing and getting inspired. It's such a private and personal thing. No one should think that because it's so private, nobody else knows about my mental habits, and they may not even know my whether I follow the four rules and so on, what's in my heart, that somehow that makes it not so crucial. That I can go through the motions of living in Vrindavan and reach the goal. Or I don't have to think about this problem, these problems. But we have to give them attention and ask the spiritual master for help and do what's necessary to take care of them. So Vrindavan is a good place for that also, although it's inappropriate that we're so handicapped and we're in the Dham, so therefore we cannot taste the real Dham, but we're here, and so we can use the mercy starting in that way. Because people are prone to misbehave, and Vrindavan is not the place for misbehavior, they're generally advised, don't stay here. Only stay 3 days and then go. And if you misbehave, then eventually you will have to go. But by rectification, while we're here, then we can make so much advancement. And it should be, objectively or in a general sense, that it is easier here. Although I said the problems get magnified, that's true too, because whatever's there will come out. Not just that it comes out in Vrindavan, but it's been there, and so here we want to face Krishna, and so the other anarthas come out. But as far as a place to practice, there's less agitation from the modes of nature here than in the big cities in the West. So there is some period of grace or situation of grace here to get stronger for when we do go back. If you use it rightly. So any deviation that we find occurring here, we have to be very careful and correct it at once. Another reason why it's easier to practice here is because we have a sense that I must be on my best behavior here. But then after a while of being here, we start to forget that and think, well, this is like ISKCON anywhere else. And then it becomes risky. Then we start being like a gambler, gambling high stakes of money. But if we keep remembering, this is a very special place, I must be on good behavior, and that itself will help us. If I'm on good behavior in Vrindavan, I make very good advancement. If I misbehave here, I get very bad reaction. And when I forget that it's a special place, then I'm in difficulty already. And if we forget the facility and the specialness of, in the relationship of spiritual master and disciple, then we're in difficulty also. You see, oh, there are so many spiritual masters, and my spiritual master is just an ordinary person. Anyone else?
So there are some natural designs who seem very deeply rooted in the heart and think that it's not possible by our own endeavor to get it out. So we see like I was thinking I was looking some picture of Lord Chaitanya, that he was very merciful, like to deliver Dragon Mada, and this one, so to deliver like tiger and the jungle. So it seems like we can pray that I'm not able by myself to take out this really deeply root, like I that. It seems like it's not possible to do. So I can pray to Krishna just get them out of my heart and instead put love Krishna. But it seems like it doesn't work like that also. It's too easy to say just take out and put love Krishna. Can you just pray like that?
So it's good that you emphasize that we can't take the anarthas out by ourselves, although I'm saying we must control, we should not misbehave. So you made a good point that the material desires are so deeply rooted, we can't do it ourselves. All we can do is surrender to Krishna and pray to Krishna. But even that may seem too easy, that we're asking Krishna to do all the work, take out the bad and put in the good. But prayer means a real, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur sometimes says, means a real piteous crying, a repeated prayer to Krishna, to please let me serve you. When we're praying all the time, every day we pray the Maha Mantra over and over. Please engage me in your service. And let me serve the holy name, let me purify my life. So that's just the opposite of, prayer is the opposite of mechanical, thoughtless repetition of prayers, but to actually call on Krishna in his name. So I'm explaining that if you do pray superficially, then maybe it won't catch Krishna's attention, and he doesn't see that you're really so desperate enough or so desiring to serve him and surrender to him. And prayer has to be accompanied by at least whatever actions we can do to show Krishna that whatever the price is, I know I can't do it myself, but I have to do something. So I'm ready to take appropriate action to for the dirty things to be removed from my heart, or to act in a way that you will remove the dirty things from my heart. In terms of controlling my senses, or going to the holy places, or hearing from the Guru, or serving the Vaishnavas, I'll do whatever I can, and I'm doing that. But if you don't do anything like that, all the things that are conductive to Krishna consciousness in Vrindavan, and still you once in a while say, Krishna, would you take the dirty things out and put pure love of God in? Then Prabhupada says, sometimes people say, can you show me God? He said, but you have to be mad after God in order to see God. Govinda virahina me. We have to show some of that love or desire for attaining love of Krishna. But you're right, it's not done by the ascending process, but by Krishna coming into our hearts, revealing himself. So we should do that. Pray to Lord Chaitanya. Pray to Krishna. Please help me. Don't try to see Krishna. Act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Got a question?
You were saying how the spiritual master is not like saying how the spiritual friend. But there is a prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he expresses how praying to the Guru that you are my spouse, you are my master, you are my friend, you know, everything to me like that. And so I'm wondering, for these being in female bodies and trying to say, or trying to, for one reason or other, being put in a situation where you have to be renounced, is it wrong to try to develop that sense of thinking about the spiritual master?
If Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in a prayer addressing the spiritual master that you are my spouse, you are my father, mother, friend, teacher, everything to me, that means that all the satisfaction and fulfillment of those other relationships I find only in my relationship with you, and I give up all the other relationships. It doesn't mean exactly that, obviously, that the guru is acting in that capacity in an ordinary family sense, that he does the activities of a husband and wife, the activities of all the other things. But he does his spiritual master activities, and the disciple's heart is feels all the reciprocation and satisfaction and doesn't need anything else. But I was referring to a person who still had material desires for a husband-wife relationship and was looking to the spiritual master to fulfill those desires. So that would be a perverted reflection approach. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking of love being placed entirely in that relationship and without the material desires. And then there's no bar whether it's male or female and so on, because it's transcended. But when there's not pure consciousness on either side, then the taint enters and the material aspects of the relationship enter. That's the fault of the Prakriti Sahajya, that they, while still having material desires, they try to enact so many spiritual pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, sometimes involving a spiritual master and female disciples. So first, everything has to be purified. Before we go beyond designation. So we have the standard understanding, the spiritual father and the disciples as daughters or spiritual sons. And as we carry out our sadhana and service like that, that's safe, and that leads to higher understanding and surrender. By that standard relationship with the spiritual master of servant or disciple with faith, then we can enter into all the more advanced rasas and so on.